person I know that could really make that work, too. Look at these gloves. I paid 15 cents for them, and his purse was a dollar. Don't I look fabulous? If I did that,
I really think that there's some little girl's jazzercise gloves. Now I can do my...
All right, hello. It's 58 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of November in the year of our Lord, 2006. Thank you for coming along and making it part of your listening day. It is the Rick Emerson Show. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious and goddamn cold studios of AM 970 Solid State Radio. Here's the thing. It's not so
freezing.
Much.
You couldn't survive in the suburbs.
No, it's true. The suburbs, which are apparently blanketed with snow and ice this morning.
Yep.
You got here at like 10:15. Scotty got here at... he was actually really late today. I had to dig myself out of the snow that was encasing the suburbs like so much marshmallow cream. And I realized something that actually Tim pointed this out, and it's entirely... I'm looking up at the ceiling now. Now, we are both...
The air is coming out of a big gaping hole with no filter.
They have cunningly designed a studio so that Sarah and Tim and I... There's two vents in the ceiling, you know, sort of air vents. Tim and I are directly underneath one. Sarah is directly underneath another. In an ideal world, this might be a good situation because then when the hot air is coming in, it heats you. When the cool air is coming in, it cools you. Except that the cool air comes in the winter, the hot air comes in the summer. We've noticed that there's absolutely no filter of any kind on either. And so... The other thing is that these ventilation ducts were apparently not used for about 10 years, and so there's a decade's worth of grime, dust, sand, grit, pollen, and filth inside. And there's no filter, so all of that accumulated dust, 10 years worth, is just blowing directly down into our lungs.
Good times, my friend.
And Sarah's wearing some gloves that she got at a Salvation Army in Marshville for $1.50.
They're very becoming.
They really are. They're like solid gold dances, like Danny Terrio gloves or something. All right.
I lost all my real gloves in Wisconsin. These are the last ones I'm left with.
I don't want to do like a bad stand-up comedy routine or something about this, but why is it that you only lose one glove? You know what I mean? At home, I got these gloves. I don't need to tell you how much I paid for them, for my these bicycling gloves for that period of my life when I was a bicyclist.
I thought you still were. It's still November.
No, December's when I'm going to start parking in the parking garage. I just parked at the... Attention, Dave Zinn at the Rick Emerson Office East. That's my car there without a tag. Please don't have it towed. Thank you. I know that we're not supposed to park at KUFO, but what are you going to do? But goddamn, it was cold this morning. And it wasn't snowing. It wasn't snowing where I was. But there was snow on my car, so it had snowed at some point during the night. And I got to tell you, and this is only tangentially related to me being a big lazy fat ass, but I really do kind of fear the bicycling when there's ice on the road. I don't think I've ever done that. I don't think I've ever bicycled when the road has been covered in ice. But I can't imagine that would work out well for me. Did you bicycle? No, you took the bus.
I took the bus, but I'm going to ride my bike home.
Did you listen to those, goddamn, those pussies? I was listening to this morning, the list of school closings. Schools closed, half an inch of snow. Schools closed all over.
I lived in Portland when I was in high school.
Seriously, I wish I lived in a town where everybody was scared to death of their own shadow. The list of schools that were delayed, I mean, when you're a kid, that's the best thing ever, too. When you are a kid, here's what it is. School closings are sort of like the alcoholic bender of the adolescent set. Because it's a thing that's great at the time, but then you pay for it much later. Because then June comes around, and it's like June 19th, and you're still in school. Because you're having to make up snow days. Yeah, they're great at the time, though. Having a snow day is right up there with when you your alarm goes off, and it's like 5:30 in the morning. You're like, God damn, I got to get up and go to work, stupid jag-off boss. And you're like, aha, it's Saturday. And then you realize you can just go back to sleep. That's it, man. When there's a snow day, that's some of the best living you're ever going to do. The hell am I... You doing okay over there?
Yeah, my chair is...
Okay.
Ah, there we go.
All right. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you're so inclined today. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. A few emails almost all with blah, 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 already coming in. Rick, I know I said I hate this weather, but why couldn't the snow get deeper and colder where I live? I was really hoping to stay home today and get a jump start on my contribution to the pyramid. But oh no, the roads had to clear up and here I am at work. Damn it, man. Well, at least I'll have the show to get me through. I'd rather have the PBR to go with it. Maybe I'll drink tonight. That's Jason. We get lots of pyramid talk. You don't even know I mean, you probably could guess, though. With the number of engineers, professional and otherwise, who lurk in the Rick Emerson audience, I have some guy, our friend Seamus, who sends me a lot of emails. I didn't have time to read it because it really was like 45 pages long. But he sent me this big breakout last night claiming, by his estimation, let me just see if I can bottom line this here. Where is the final, the subject line of this email, and then we'll, is this Aaron? Yeah, then we'll talk to Aaron in a second. We'll tease what we're going to do. He says, I sent you an email explaining the research, including finding and analyzing the world's largest extant pyramids, which indicates the gross lowness of the previous numbers. And then he has this whole thing about how many layers we're going to do, blah, 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 blah. He has come to the conclusion that to create a pyramid that is the size of the Christmas tree in downtown Pioneer Courthouse Square, we will need... Wait, do I have a drum roll? Wait, let me find it.
I do.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
By his estimation, he is a learned man.
I don't.
Okay, I think I have it right here. We will need 1,016,000. I'm sorry. 1,016,160 cans. He says, my previous email was a bit low in terms of estimation. Jesus, God. So we'll talk more about it. The CBS engineers have weighed in rather heavily on this, and we will get more of their contributions as today plunges on ahead. All right, it's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. You can also email. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Let's see, Rick, you are a bunch of babies. There was snow on the cars in my neighborhood this morning. Quit your whining. Also, I have the same vent in my office. I call it the monsoon vent. Right now, there's a lovely strong breeze blowing directly into my face. All right, thank you. That's glad to know. Good to know that we're all suffering a lot together here. Let's see, where's...
Hold
thank
me.
You.
Like you did by the lake on Naboo.
Welcome to the Rick Emerson Program. Our good friend Aaron Geek in the city, Duran. Hello, sir.
Hey.
Hey, sorry, am I bothering you?
No, it's fine. It's just, man, days like this, I wish I still worked for the city.
Are you calling from the Palace of Justice?
No, I'm calling from the basement of my soul-sucking job.
Soul-sucking job is what he said.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it sounded like your phone, and I do think it is you, because I've noticed this every day, that you... there's a difference between the way the mailman Chris's calls. I don't know whether it's his provider or whoever it is, but there's a certain crispness and clarity to his calls. And yours have this sort of, your calls sound a little fuzzy around the edges sometimes. So
I think it's because he calls from the outside, and I have to call inside a marble encrusted building.
That could be it.
If I go outside, I step outside of the bus mall. So you either get this or you get every 30 seconds.
About now, are you downtown?
Yes.
What? I thought you were working at some job in Gresham.
No, I left that a long time ago.
He moved up.
He took stepping up in the world.
He took his next step on the ladder of success.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, wait. Now, have you noticed this? Then we'll move on. But I was talking about this the other day, and this seems to be a thing that only I have experienced. It's on 5th and, between Washington and... Let's see, it goes older, Washington, and whatever that next street is, Yamhill or something. Have you noticed that there's just a ferocious stink downtown? And it's only on 5th, though.
I have noticed it. I thought it was just me.
No, and the same thing. I thought it was me, too. I'm, like, looking at my shoes and my armpits and whatever. But it's not that there is some sort of just hellacious funk on that one block downtown. I don't know whether it's sewage. I don't know whether there's some sort of a...
It's like the fermenting fish. It's disgusting.
That's exactly what the smell. You are totally right about that. I don't know whether there's standing water somewhere, if there's some kind of a homeless enclave, some kind of a soup kitchen or something. But, man, you walk one block in either direction, and the smell is completely gone. But you stand down there, and I swear to God, it's like you're inside some sort of a greenhouse where they've been fermenting corpses all day.
Maybe they're corpses in the old Shanghai tunnels.
And, I mean, there's something.
Opium dens?
It may be. There's something there. I don't know whether it's coming out of the sewer or whether it's just in the air around that place. All right. Let's see. Well, here's what we got today. We'll ask how many cans would a pyramid take if a pyramid did take cans. And here's the thing. Britney Spears
We could make a million beers, couldn't we?
But, Steve, there's no way that number... I don't want to get sidetracked by this now. We'll get sidetracked by it. Maybe late. Maybe at the... Let's see. We have Lisa Goddard, I think, at the bottom of the hour. So maybe at like 11:40, 11:45. We'll get some people to weigh in with their own estimations on this. But it doesn't seem like it can possibly be correct. Susan Reynolds colored me about this morning. She said, so are we making a beer can for the holiday season or what? Should I be prepared for this? And I said, well, it has been a thing that we've been sort of toying with. And she said, well, you just let me know. And I said, okay. But it doesn't seem like it could possibly take a million beer cans to create. I mean, we're only talking about 70 feet, right? I mean,
well, it needs a base. I mean, you can't just go straight up.
Yeah, I understand that. But I'm just saying, roughly speaking, and I know that this is just an estimate. Everybody felt like they had to email in about my math skills yesterday. I understand that 5 inches and 5 inches is not a foot. But I'm saying if we estimate, you bastards, that two 5-inch beer cans is a foot, 70, that's 140 beer cans high. You have one at the top, then two, then four, then eight, 16, 32, 64, etc. Seems like that's going to be a couple thousand at most. I don't understand. And really, if the email hadn't been 100 pages long, I might have actually read it. But
well,
it seems
it's going to need a wide base to maintain its stability if you're going to make it higher than the tree.
Okay, but that's not true. Because what we would do is we would take, and here we are getting sidetracked, but I'm just saying, what we would do is we would take the beer cans and we would affix the bottom row to some sort of a large piece of particle board, plywood, whatever. We would screw the lowest level of cans onto the board, which would then be, you get yourself a big piece of particle board, that's not going to tip over. You screw the lowest level of cans onto that, and then, of course, every level up, you need fewer and fewer cans. That's all I'm saying.
Well, that's not a true pyramid. Then you're building the Eiffel pyramid.
You know, who are you to make assessments about what a true pyramid is?
A true pyramid should be equal sides on all four sides.
So it'd be a beer triangle.
Yeah, like a D4.
It'd be. And we come full circle. Okay. Let's see what else. We'll talk about Britney's. Here's the thing, is that Britney Spears has to understand that no one's going to pay to see her crotch if she keeps giving it away for free. If she can't go to a 7-Eleven to buy a Slurpee without showing us her, no one's going to fork over $29.99 for that. What else? Sarah lives among the Amish and comes to tell their tales. We'll talk to CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. What do we all think about this? Lisa Goddard has been asking, and her fiancé, Jason Sporbert, who we are going to speak to on this show. It was the last thing I do. Because I don't understand why you wouldn't just change that name as soon as you turned 18 and had a spare $50 in your pocket. Lisa Goddard from CNN has asked us to come up with a new last name for her so that she and her future children might live without shame. She's asked for something that has an air of delightful intrigue. What do we all think of this? Lisa Del Rio.
Look at the taco sauce.
Yeah. I want a burrito.
Yeah.
Sounds like someone who wears fishnet stockings.
I'm a banana. Well, there you go. There's a little bit of intrigue there. Fishnets equal intrigue.
What about Lisa McBain?
Lisa McBain. Now, she sounds like an inner city cop.
Yeah.
She sounds like she's going to take you in the basement with Sipowitz and beat your nads with a thing that is beaten. All right. Well, there you go. So Lisa Goddard, Ed McCarthy will call and sound drunk from the South, as he always does. I got this story about the Steve Irwin's death film. That's exciting. And apparently Britney Spears spent a lot of her marriage punching Kevin Federline in the face. So that's good news for all of us. Plus, there's this stupid list out about catchphrases, which I normally wouldn't. It's not the kind of thing I would typically read, except that just like 2 weeks ago, we were talking about Sarah and her lack of catchphrase knowledge.
Like something for a morning show.
It is. It's typically the kind of thing I would just eschew because, it's only 11:15. It's probably been done by every morning show in the goddamn country by now. I mean, just in like the...
Right after Battle of the Sexes.
Exactly. Just in like the 6 hours that, since then and now, it's probably been done. But we have to talk about it because it's a thing we were talking about a couple weeks ago. So there you go. And we'll continue to monitor whether or not it's snowing where we are. So there we are, my friend.
Man, you teased a lot.
Yeah, I know. It's what I
do.
So
you got the pyramid, you got Goddard, you got Britney Spears and her crotch, Tales from the Amish, McCartney, Irwin's death video, and catchphrases that Sarah doesn't know about.
Yes, yes, indeed, that is true. All right. Hey, by the way, you're a man who about the things and
yeah.
Stuff. You got a good sense of noirish style. You got a suggestion for Lisa Goddard's last name?
Well, see, that's why I think McBain works. Isn't that the person who also wrote the Sam Spade story?
No. You're thinking of Dashiell Hammett.
Oh, crap.
Or is it Raymond Chandler? Raymond Chandler wrote the Philip Marlowe novels.
Yeah. Oh,
right?
Be, and Perry Mason.
He could be Lisa
really?
Stanman.
I think so.
No. That was Earl Stanley Gardner who wrote the Perry Mason novels.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Yes, you are.
No,
it is very rarely is that the case, but I believe in this. It was Earl Stanley Gardner. As a bonus point, do you know the name of the only case that Perry Mason ever lost?
No.
The case of the terrified typist.
Mm.
Bam! There you go. That's why I'm here. All right. To amuse and be the object of scorn and ridicule, and to demonstrate my lifelessness. You know what I did last night? Lord of the Rings, 4.5 hours. All right. There we go. Where am I? What's that?
Peter Jackson's back on.
With The Hobbit?
Yeah.
Fantastic. I heard a thing about that, but I didn't dare believe that it was true.
Yeah.
All right. Where am I at push-up-wise?
Chris knows. I don't know.
Okay. So can I just make it up?
Yeah.
Let's say 58.
It is not 58. You said 58 yesterday, and it was 61. It's like 62 or 63.
Are you prepared
to say 63.
Yeah.
63.
You can't just make that up. All right, fine, 63.
Don't make me say 65.
All right, fine. No need to be all snippy about it. All right, excellent. All right, thank you, my friend. And we'll check in with Mailman Chris at the end of the program to see where I am in all of this.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. All right, there you go. Aaron, Geek in the City, Duran in downtown Portland. All right, it's 503-733-2970. Yeah, Ed McBain. Thank you. This is Christian from Accounting. Ed McBain writes the Precinct 57th novels or whatever. He's like a crime writer. McBain sounds a little too rough and tumble. You know who could be named McBain? Candy Crowley. She could totally, Candy McBain, bam, and then she'd hit you right in the face with something blunt. We're joined today, as are we always, by Sarah Dillon, who's wearing gloves. How much did the gloves cost?
50 cents.
Then they came. You bought them at the same time.
And I actually got these earrings at a different, at like a farm supply store. They had this whole rack of like dusty 80s earrings.
Are you sure those are earrings?
They're earrings.
Those might be fishing weights. No, are earrings.
They were two for 99 cents.
Are they Christmas ornament earrings?
No.
Oh, that's
too
bad.
They're silver balls.
You could get away with that. You could really get away with wearing like big Christmas ornament earring things, like, you know,
oh,
for
my
couple
mom
days surrounding
me.
The holiday.
She always made us wear like Halloween, like she'd give us Halloween necklaces and earrings and stuff and dress us up like we were little dolls.
Laura's got this thing where she wears season appropriate socks, like when Halloween comes, which I actually find kind of cute, but when like a Halloween comes around, you look at her feet and it's like, her socks, it's like pumpkins, black cats, witches, moons, etc. And then as soon as Christmas rolls around, and it's a thing that, it's a habit that she picked up from a friend of ours. Like, she never used to do it, but then we had a female friend who did it. And now, you look in her drawer, it's just like endless rolls of holiday socks.
See, my every holiday socks, it doesn't matter when I wear them, they're just like when I know it's laundry day. I have some socks with like Santa Claus on them. My friend Lisa got me some holiday socks, which she found very amusing. I've wore them on the plane to keep me safe. They say Jesus rocks. And they had, and they're all gray and sparkly, and then they had two guitars making a cross.
Excellent.
Yeah, those are my holiday socks.
And it was a safe place.
It was.
That's because Jesus was with you.
Those Jesus gloves.
Tim Riley's working on this following story for your edification today.
I'm trying to remember if I ever saw A Christmas Carol starring Tori Spelling and William Shatner.
I'm sorry,
A Christmas Carol, which stars Tori Spelling and William Shatner.
Oh, but it's not a Christmas... it's Christmas Carol, C-A-R-O-L, right?
It says C-A-R-O-L,
that's how you spell Carol.
Carol. That's how you spell Christmas Carol.
Well, it's spelled like the name. How do you spell the name, Carol?
Oh. C-A-R-O-L.
Shut up! Everybody shut your mouth.
I get it.
Joined at the hair. The joint at the hair is going to be shorthand for whenever one of us just has a complete and total brain lock.
So is this about somebody named Carol?
That's what I'm saying, you bunch of jackals.
My favorite is Ebby. Have you seen that? It's based on Ebenezer Scrooge. It has Susan Lucci in it.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like something I'd have to see. How can I miss something with Susan Lucci in it?
So good.
Susan Lucci's like 500 years old and withered.
Yeah, but she's really bitchy and unlovable, and then she finds the real meaning of Christmas.
Okay.
The Charlie Brown Christmas is on tonight,
it
too.
Is. Mm-hmm. It is. The Charlie Brown Christmas, and it's three cells of animation that repeat over and over and over again. I mean, I love it. It's sweet. It really is. But I got to tell you, man, if you have a kid, you're going to have to sedate him to get him to watch that. Mm-hmm. Mailman Chris is going to have to duct tape his kids to the couch and dose them with NyQuil if he wants to find them to find that interesting, because it's not that it's without its charm. A Charlie Brown Christmas is a legitimately sweet and charming piece of Americana.
And they had a month to make it.
It's, what's that?
I think they had like a month to make it.
Well, that would explain it, man, because it's so slow moving. I mean, it's just, you watch it and there's like whole sequences where they're just skating along like, and you see the same tree go by in the background like 100 times and nothing really happens. It's also one of those things they probably couldn't make today because it's full of,
religion.
Yes, and Jesus.
I was surprised this has, I didn't remember having that much religion as a kid.
No, Peanuts is all about religion. I mean, not in a heavy-handed way as such.
Right.
But, I mean, there's that where Linus, and then they were abiding in the fields, and then blah, 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 the angel of the Lord came upon them, and you know what, because if you go back and read the golden age of the Peanuts cartoons, which is like the 60s, like around the Woodstock, I mean, the concert era, like around like the 65, 67, 68, 69, Linus, for example, I can't believe I'm spending this much time talking about Peanuts, but Linus is constantly talking about religion, and like really obscure observations too. Like there's this one Peanuts comic strip I read when I was a kid where for some reason Charlie Brown is like, so do you want to kick the football or whatever it is, you know, you want to go hang yourself, you know, whatever it is he's asking Linus, and Linus responds with some, I swear to God I read this, he responds with some dissertation. What are those stones in the book of Exodus that scholars cast to determine the will of God? They're called the Ummim and Thummim or something?
Yeah, I guess so.
Whatever. It's the weirdest comic strip. It's a comic strip that would probably not really make it in today's world. Merry Christmas, Charlie Brown is at least... It's a legitimately sweet piece of American culture. You really should watch it. A Christmas Carol, on the other hand, with William Shatner and Tori Spelling.
Yes.
I know this is hard to believe, but that's terrible. And it is about a woman named Carol.
It's on the Hallmark Channel.
Yeah. So
right, because it's spelled like Carol?
Because it's spelled like Carol.
Oh, I get it.
So I guess if you find the homonym comedic stylings of all of the other reindeer to be a little too challenging, you can just skip right to the bottom of the page, watch a Christmas special with William Shatner in it.
Does Tori Spelling wear a lot of Santa hats?
God, I don't know. All I know is that there's no scene in which she's beaten to death with a snow shovel and wild dogs feast upon her corpse. So that doesn't interest me at all. Someday when they make that, you let me know and I'll watch it.
Meanwhile, in the news today, we will accept nothing less than complete victory in Iraq, says the president. Plans for museum honoring ABBA have been drawn up for Sweden. A Missouri professor gets a jail term for covering his son with ants and hot sauce. And Brittany has $29 million to spend on a brand new house in Florida.
And there we go.
Yes.
All right. I'm sorry. Every time you say the word Britney, I just get those pictures flashing in my brain again. Which
God.
Is true. Yes.
Does she not read? You know she reads the tabloids.
Well, no, but it's intentional. It's got to be. That's what I'm saying.
But that's
maybe
not
it's
pretty.
A body double.
What? One would hope. There's some. I mean,
it's just not.
I'm just saying.
When you're
this.
Like just okay. Playing Britney's blah 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 blah.
Can I say something?
I know, okay, now I suspect, let me just say, I suspect I know what you're going to say, and I'm glad that you're saying it so I don't have to.
Oh, I don't know, I don't think we might be saying different things.
Oh, well, we'll find out.
Okay.
This is Sarah Dillon saying this.
All right, it's speculation.
Oh.
It's been rumored, no, and a lot, of, like, for the past couple of years that Kevin Federline gave her this horribly nasty STD, which is why she's having all of her children C-section.
So maybe walking around without panties on isn't a good idea.
Yeah, which is why I'm afraid, like, the next time she flashes, there might be something going on down there that you don't want to see.
See, but... I don't think, well, I mean, I don't know. I can't speculate as to whether that's the case or not, but I'm just saying that it seems to me that those pictures aren't an accident. Like, that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. She knows, you know, that
you
she's showing
she's
off.
Getting out. I don't get out of the car like, you know.
Getting out of the car like you're putting your feet in the stirrups. Sort of like half club visit, half pap smear.
Man. And that's, it's like belly button to like... the top of her body.
I'm just embarrassed.
You can see everything.
And I'm just embarrassed for her, for all of us. I mean, they just...
It could be a body double.
No, is it? But
they call Central Casting and ask for something in particular, and they got it.
And here's the... I'd like something in a... Do you have something in a crotch? Great. Send it over, would you? Thank you so much. My man will pick it up at the front.
That is doable.
The thing about these Britney Spears pictures, though, is... No pun intended. Does it seem like there's a rash of these photos lately? Lindsay Lohan showing her vagina. Paris Hilton showing her crotch.
And all the vagina girls are together now.
The vagina, the V girls.
It's just I just feel embarrassed for her, and I know that I shouldn't because like what the hell does Britney Spears care what I think of her or me or anybody? She's got $1 billion. It doesn't matter. But I look
can
at
you
those.
Imagine how embarrassing it is. Like I had my skirt blow up like a couple of weeks ago, and I was wearing and my underwear just showed, and that is humiliating.
Right.
Even just to do that, like these girls are flashing everything they got.
Well, that's the other thing is it's like I. I mean, look, I know that it seems like a betrayal of my brethren to encourage Britney to cover up, but I'm just saying there is, I hate to say this, but there really is a little something to the mystery there. You know what I mean? It's always a lot better in your imagination than it is when she's caught getting out of a limo at the Chateau Marmont and you're getting the gyno cam. I mean, that's nothing. No, because, and see, here's what I was going to say. I have to tread lightly here.
Yeah.
You don't even know.
I probably do.
Choosing every word carefully.
I am choosing every word carefully. I am simply making
an observation.
I'm making an observation as a news person. This is a news program. News and public affairs. We are in a news segment of a news program. On this, a news station.
Caring about the community.
I got a news person sitting right here. An actual news, but the news this.
Hear that?
The news director.
That's the news counter.
That's the news desk. Counter.
Yeah, counter.
Thing.
Okay, make your observation.
Here's the observation that I'm going to make in my capacity as news person. I have what is that? You making a little hand gesture there?
No, nothing. Go ahead.
What are you doing?
No, I'm trying to figure out what you're going to say.
Are you just simulating a fish swimming?
No.
Oh.
Are you?
No. Why would I do that? It doesn't make any sense.
I don't know.
I'm just going to say that now, I believe, and I think many women would agree on this, I think most people, period, regardless of gender, would agree on this. I believe that, aesthetically speaking, as a general rule, the female body is I think, aesthetically more pleasing than the male body in many ways. Male body is like a Costco. It's just a lot of exposed ductwork, you know, sort of plumbing, you know, and asbestos-coated walls that need to be covered up. You know what I'm saying? Whereas I think the female, and I know that this sounds like a justification that one of those, like, porno guys uses, the female body is beautiful. Pay $1.99 to see it inside, you know?
More curvaceous.
That's what I'm saying. It's a lot of curves, and, you know, it is no secret that a lot of famous American car designs were loosely modeled on sort of the female form.
It's
a lot of
streamlined.
Curves, streamlining, yeah. Sloping edges, so forth, blah, blah. I'm not trying to be gross about it. I mean, it's true.
The asshole.
But I will say, maybe not the Edsel. Oh. No, the Ford Fairlane. That being said, I do believe that in a candid setting, meaning like when you're getting out of a car, for example, or you're bending over to pick up a piece of paper off the ground, I do believe that the upper half of the female form, how do I put this? I think it's, at just the wrong angle, the lower half of the female form can sometimes look a little unpleasant.
Well, there.
How do I put that?
There's the innie part and there's the outie part of the girl.
In belly buttons, you mean?
Yes, in belly buttons. Yes.
And the inside.
And there are also girls who have had two kids.
Through their belly button.
Oh, no, she didn't. Wait, that's an explanation then.
What are we talking about?
Nothing.
I'm just saying, if you see, you know, a woman perhaps from the back or from the waist up, unless you're catching her, like, in mid-leap as she goes to, like, return a volley, you know, generally speaking, you're going to come away, you know, it's hard to mess that up, you know, visually. I'm saying the lower half there, at just the wrong moment, getting out of a car, walking, bending over outside a nightclub, that is a shot that can look a little awkward, and it can be a little unpleasant, I think, aesthetically. That's all I'm
saying. It looks really wrong.
Scotty, are you there? All right, can you get the hotline, please? Oh, never mind, it stopped ringing. Okay, there you go.
We haven't taken a break. Let's take Lisa and then we'll break.
Or Lisa Del Rio, as I'm going to call. All right, that's all I'm saying about the Britney Spears photos. Is there just,
I couldn't even bring myself to post any of those. And why would I? It's just wrong and gross and wrong.
That's what I'm saying.
They're so, more than anyone might desire in one sitting.
Really, it is. It's a little too much, Britney.
I can understand, like, you know, having, you know, if your shirt, like, gets a little loose and perhaps you expose a breast. But I think, you know,
she's reached a point of overexposure.
Yes.
Yes, figuratively
she
and literally.
She totally lost those kids.
No, it's, I don't think that's true because that purports that the inadvertent walking outside without the underwear.
Maybe her mom will just take care of them.
Yeah, because she did such a bang-up job raising her and what's her name? Is it Lynn? Who's her sister?
Jamie Lynn?
Because the mom is Lynn. Did you hear that Kevin Federline showed up at her house at Lynn Spears, at the mom, Mama Spears' house? He was like, why'd you tell your baby girl to take me back? Totally showed up outside Mrs. Spears' house all drunk and whatnot. All right. Are we? Is it already 11:30?
Yes.
It is.
This is what happens when we're discussing Britney Spears' belly button. All right, 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, it's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show. Hello! Oh, it's so loud. From the Hill, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. Hello, Lisa.
What's up? What is up? How are you?
I'm sorry. You were just buried under lots of volume there. Hey, what do you think about this? I'm just going to ask you. Just going to run this by you. Give me your thought on this. How about Lisa Del Rio?
Oh, I don't know.
Say no.
I don't know. It feels a little name brand.
Sarah was saying that it made her want a taco, and I don't hear that. See, to me, it has everything. It has it's exotic, it has mystique, it has intrigue. It's
But he had Dolores Del Rio though.
Who is Dolores Del Rio?
Dolores Del Rio, a famous movie star of the early 20th century, mid 20th century.
How is it that you know these things?
I don't know. I do like the old movies.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Tim Riley probably knows that. Okay, fine. Well, I'll keep working on it then.
All right.
Well, in any event, so we talked a little bit about this yesterday, but I do want to revisit it just a bit. Now, is it Chuck Hagel or was it? I'm trying to keep these straight in my head because there was NBC, which is now describing the Iraq situation, not to be just. And we ended on such a down note yesterday. We ended on, we're talking about the Jason Sporbert and whatever, and then it ended with
pyramid,
and the pyramid, and then it ended with like we're all doomed and Iraq is going to hell in a handbasket and so forth. But I want to make sure that I got this straight. So it's NBC that has called this a civil war, and it's Chuck Hagel who has called this what, a morass?
Anarchy.
That's, anarchy. I suppose, worse than a morass.
Yes. NBC is not alone. The LA Times and New York Times have done this as well. But, you know, and they like to point out that they started using the term civil war in October with less fanfare than NBC. NBC certainly has made a bit of a to-do about it, or at least they've explained it even for the past couple of days while they've been doing it. But so they're not alone, but they are the first real and national broadcasters to do that.
And so when Chuck Hagel does, and we touched a little bit on this yesterday, is this just his way of getting attention for some reason or another, or is he this week's Charles Rangel, is he this week's designated bomb thrower so that other folks, even though it's Republican, so other folks don't have to get their hands dirty saying this?
You know, I don't think that Chuck Hagel is sorry to be getting any attention. He knows he needs attention if he's going to run for president. But that said, I don't think he's out there just trying to grab any media spotlight he can get, say whatever he has to in order to get attention. I think this is a man who does know the military, and he's not outlandish. I don't think he's just making this up as he goes along. I think he is trying to say things that may get him attention, but he's trying to say things that he thinks are accurate.
And so this is, George Bush made this statement this morning where I guess he is still fixated on this notion of being the firm, inflexible leader who is not going to back down and not going to make any changes or alterations. But he does seem to vacillate every single day. It's like he has some sort of a magic eight ball sitting right there in the Oval Office desk, and he says, either we are going to adjust or we're not going to adjust, depending on which way the wind is blowing. We're either going to stay the course or we're going to have a new direction in Iraq. And then this morning what was he saying this morning, that we're not going to draw down until we have absolute peace and stability, or words to that effect?
Well, he said basically until the mission is accomplished, until Iraq is stable, and that he's not going to pull U.S. troops. But, you know, he says these things in such a way that he isn't saying that he might not draw down the troops. He's saying there will be some troops left in Iraq until the battle is won. So these are all very general things that can be reinterpreted as the president likes, and he certainly is probably going to need to do that as the situation changes, or he hopes it will change in Iraq.
All right, there's actually two quick things here before we go. One, I know that he's going to Iraq to meet with the prime minister that he's going to be meeting with?
Yeah, he's going to be meeting with the prime minister of Iraq. They're meeting in Jordan. They're set to meet in Jordan. That's going to be Thursday.
Should I be reading into the fact that they're actually not even meeting in Iraq? The prime minister of Iraq in another country altogether?
Yeah, I think your thoughts aren't far off. I think that the president is going to be the world's largest target if he goes to Iraq, going to Jordan. Even so, that's a stable country, but even that has a little bit of a risk because they know he's coming. But he certainly is not going to announce any kind of visit to Iraq because He knows the state of violence there, and he certainly would be rise right to the top of the hit list for insurgents there.
I'm not a learned man, so I don't really pretend to understand exactly how the Iraqi government is set up. But is it? Do they have like an do they have an Iraqi prime minister and a president and like a a dog catcher and a school board leader? And I don't understand how that government is even set up.
I know for Americans, it's a different concept. The prime minister is essentially your head of government. He's the one that controls basically how government works. The president is your head of state, which means it's more of a formality, more of official functions, that kind of thing. But the president in Iraq, the president and vice president and the prime minister all have a role in the government and in making ultimate decisions, the three of them together. But the prime minister is really, if there was one person to point to in Iraq, the prime minister is the head of government. Of course, then you get into the issue of Iraq has what's called a coalition government, which means no single party has a majority in their parliament. Unlike us, they have many different parties that are viable. We only have two. Well, they have four or five, they have many more than that. I'm simplifying things. They have dozens of parties, but they have a few major parties. None of them has a majority, so they have to form coalitions together in order to rule, and that's what the situation is with Iraq's prime minister now. His problem is he has support from this militia leader, al-Sadr. Muqtada al-Sadr, many people know about him. He's often called a radical militant leader. He is supporting the prime minister right now, but he has said he'll withdraw his support and his political power from this Iraqi government if the prime minister talks to the president on Thursday. A lot of people say that's a bluff, but if it's not, it could lead to a serious unraveling of Iraq's political structure.
His whole thing is just like one big, horrible, ongoing, never-ending, unstable, violent game of risk over there. And here's the thing. Every time they talk about the Iraqi president, you know what I picture Lucy Van Pelt in the Peanuts comic strips just sitting behind it. The president is in, and just every day just rotating the name up top.
Right.
So, man, all right. Hey, but as a final question, and this is completely off subject, it has nothing to do with what you're talking about, so you can be sure to mention that to Laura Caviezel that you came on and then you were completely brought off topic by that evil hellion Rick Emerson.
From them, yes.
This Russian spy, yes, who got poisoned or dosed with radiation or something, and that I don't mean to make light of it or just to minimize the fact that the Russians allegedly filled some guy's head up with plutonium when he was looking the other way or whatever, but it does seem to be a sort of disproportionately big story. I mean, I hate to stereotype, but I just sort of assumed that the Russian government kills people all the time.
Well, I guess if your assumption is correct, and I'm not saying it is, the issue is they certainly don't get caught very often, and they certainly don't have someone live long enough to have a media a photo op, which is what happened to Alexander Litvinenko. He was alive long enough to say, not only I am a spy, but also to say he thought the Kremlin was behind his assassination. And then you have the added element of the fact that we're talking about some kind of nuclear radiation poisoning in London in some restaurant, and now other people are worried. They've picked up traces of radiation around London, so you've got the whole sort of public scare. Did you eat sushi or did you eat plutonium? That kind of situation. So it really, and of course the new James Bond movie is out at the time. I'm not saying the Hollywood studios planned all this, but maybe we should look at them.
All right, so it is just that if they did kill him, they didn't do it with their normal grace and efficacy.
Yeah, apparently it certainly doesn't seem like it. Although you would suspect that they would know, whoever did this would know, doctors were going to figure it out. Radiation poisoning doesn't really look like pneumonia.
True. You can't really disguise that as a bad case of like the chicken pox.
Right, exactly. The loss of hair, the complete deterioration of all tissue. You'd think that they were going to get figured out, but apparently they didn't care. They wanted this man dead.
I just picture them taking some huge, like, radioactive rod out of the base of the guy's spine and go, "This is your problem right here, sir." So,
right, we found it. But on the very same, maybe they were watching a Simpsons episode.
I'm just gonna take you out with this final email, Rick. This email says, "I have it—the perfect name for Lisa. She needs a mysterious yet familiar name, and by her own admission, she has a love for the older films. Wait for it. He says. This email continues with Lisa. This doesn't work because it's the name of a dog. Lisa Maltese. Isn't a Maltese also a dog?
Maltese.
I think he's thinking Maltese Falcon.
Yeah, but it's still a nice word.
Is it? But it is kind of, it's got something to it. I feel suddenly like I'm striped somehow.
I don't know.
I have some great kind of pattern on my skin.
Okay, it's probably just plutonium.
But
I wouldn't worry about it. There you go. That's a callback right there in comedy terms.
Maltese Falcon, fantastic movie, though.
All right. Lisa Goddard or Del Rio or Maltese or
right.
Whatever. All right. We will talk to you very soon, sister. Have a good day.
Great. You too.
Thank you. There you go. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, on the Hill in D.C. We get back. We'll talk to Don and Canby, who says, if you are serious, he's going to contact the Guinness people, I think, on our behalf. Well, we'll find out. We'll talk to Don and Canby when we get back. It's the Rick Emerson Show. It's AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. We return after this.